In 2020, the most important chart in the world was made by a data journalist at the Financial Times. You've seen it, the one that showed how fast COVID was spreading in every country, the one that governments used to justify lockdowns, the one that was viewed by hundreds of millions of people. That chart was built in a programming language most people have never heard of, a language created as a joke between two guys in a corridor in New Zealand. The language is called R, just the letter. And it runs more of the modern world than you'd ever guess. Every drug that gets approved by the FDA, R helps analyze the clinical trials. Every time a news organization forecasts an election, probably R. The entire Human Genome Project, built on R's infrastructure. Google, Pfizer, the BBC, they all use it. And the whole thing started because two professors in Auckland, New Zealand, couldn't afford the software they needed to teach an undergraduate statistics class. They decided to build their own. They named it after their own initials, as a joke. Neither of them ever made a cent from it. One of them eventually called his own creation a failure. The other left academia for Silicon Valley. And the language they built? It's now used by over 2 million people and has sparked one of the most vicious community wars in all of programming. This is the untold story of R. To understand R, you have to go back to 1976. Bell Laboratories, the same place that invented Unix, C, and the transistor. A statistician named John Chambers.
Well, we have a guest here today, Dr. John Chambers. John was the inventor of the S language, which is the language that we use in R.
Was sitting in meetings, frustrated. Every time he wanted to analyze data, he had to write a program in Fortran, not run a command, not click a button, write a Fortran program. Every single time. So Chambers and a small team created a language called S, named with a single letter, following the tradition set by C. S was revolutionary for one reason. It let you talk to data interactively, type a command, get a result. No compiling, no waiting, just conversation with your data. Chambers' guiding philosophy was deceptively simple. Turn ideas into software, quickly and faithfully. He wanted people to start using software without even realizing they were programming, and then gradually slide into deeper code as they needed it. S became the gold standard. In 1998, Chambers won the ACM Software System Award, the same award given to Unix, the World Wide Web, and TeX. But here's where the story turns. In 1988, a startup called Statistical Sciences got an exclusive license to sell S commercially as a product called S+. It cost thousands of dollars per seat for a university department in New Zealand trying to teach undergrads on Macintosh computers with 4 megabytes of RAM, completely out of reach. That pricing decision, that one corporate choice to lock S behind a paywall, created the opening for everything that followed. Around 1990, in the statistics department at the University of Auckland, two men ran into each other in a hallway. Ross Ihaka, a New Zealander of Maori descent who'd done his PhD at Berkeley, where he'd rub shoulders with Bill Joy, the founder of Sun Microsystems, and Robert Gentleman, a Canadian visiting on sabbatical from the University of Waterloo. The conversation, as Ihaka later recalled it, went something like this. Gentleman said, "Let's write some software." Ihaka said, "Sure, that sounds like fun." That was it. That was the founding moment of a language that would be used by millions. Their goal was modest. They needed something for their undergraduate Mac lab. S+ was too expensive and didn't run on Macintosh. What they built first wasn't even an S clone, it was a Lisp interpreter. Only later did they adopt S's syntax to make it useful for teaching. The name? They called it R, partly because both their names start with R, partly as a play on the letter S. As a joke, the name R is coined, Ihaka recalled, and it caused a very specific practical problem for years. Try Googling a single letter, it's impossible. The community eventually invented the hashtag #rstats, just so people could find each other. On August 4, 1993, Ihaka posted to the S News mailing list announcing their project. This was R's first public appearance, but R might have stayed a tiny academic curiosity, if not for one pivotal decision. In 1995, Martin Messler of ETH Zurich convinced them to release R under the GNU General Public License, making it free software. The creators had briefly considered selling it. Ihaka later said, "We thought we might be successful enough to sell 10 copies. Who the heck cares about that? So we went the free software route and just let it spread itself." That decision to give it away was arguably the most consequential choice in the history of statistical computing. On February 29, 2000, a leap day, R1.00 was released. And John Chambers, the creator of S, joined the R core team that same year. The man who built the commercial language watched his free competitor win, and then joined the winning side.
Before we go further, a quick note. This video is co-presented by CodeRabbit, an AI platform redefining how developers write, review, and refine code.
Here's what's remarkable, neither creator ever made a dollar from R. Rossi Hucker remained an associate professor at Auckland until retiring in 2017. His father was part of a generation forbidden from speaking Maori. His grandfather would beat his father if caught using the language. Ihaka has described himself as Maori, Pakeha, both and neither. He received the Pickering Medal from the Royal Society of New Zealand, but no windfall. His reflection on R carries a certain tenderness. R changed my opinion of humanity to some extent, to see how people are really willing to freely give of themselves and produce something larger than themselves without any thought of personal glory. Robert Gentleman took a completely different path. He left academia for industry, Genentech, VP at 23andMe, then Harvard Medical School. His most lasting contribution beyond R was Bioconductor, the open-source bioinformatics project he co-founded in 2001, which made R the dominant language in genomics with over 2,300 packages and 45 million downloads a year. And then there's the twist nobody expects. Ihaka, the co-creator of R, became one of its harshest critics. In 2010, he published a paper arguing R had fundamental performance problems, no scalar types, excessive memory copying, a slow interpreter. He demonstrated a 500x performance improvement by working around R's data frame behavior. His verdict was blunt. My considered opinion is that R is not the system we should be using into the indefinite future. The co-creator, calling his own creation inadequate. He spent his retirement working on a replacement language. It never gained traction. If Ihaka and Gentleman created R, one person more than anyone else made R usable. His name is Hadley Wickham. Born in 1979 in Hamilton, New Zealand, the same country where R was created. He initially studied medicine at Auckland before switching to statistics. In 2005, during his PhD at Iowa State, Wickham created ggplot2, a visualization package that implemented the grammar of graphics. It was beautiful, it was elegant, it made R produce publication quality charts with a few lines of code. It's been downloaded over 171 million times. His book on it has been cited 87,000 times. Then he kept going. DeepLi for data manipulation, TiDi for reshaping, RedR for importing, package after package, each one making R dramatically easier. In 2016, he unified them under the name Tidyverse. The community had already started calling it the Hadleyverse, a hint of the controversy to come. In 2019, Wickham won the COPSS President's Award, basically the Nobel Prize of Statistics. It was the first time the award was given for building tools rather than proving theorems. His academic department at Rice University hadn't even considered his open source work to be research. He left that tenure-track position, but the Tidyverse also ignited R's most bitter internal war. UC Davis professor Norm Matloff published a fiery essay arguing that R is rapidly devolving into two mutually unintelligible dialects. His charge, R Studio, a commercial company, was gaining too much control over an open source language. He pointed out the cult of personality, Wickham treated like a rock star, fans selling Tidy branded merchandise. Others accused Tidyverse of making students dependent on abstractions they didn't understand, of creating an end run around R's official leadership. The debate has never fully resolved. It's the Vim versus Emacs of the statistics world, except the stakes are higher, because the outcome determines how millions of scientists learn to think about data. For most of its life, R had a problem. It could produce the most statistically rigorous, most beautiful analysis in the world, and that analysis would be trapped, stuck in an academic paper, buried in a PDF. Invisible to anyone who didn't read journals for a living. Data scientists would spend days building sophisticated analyses with gorgeous ggplot2 charts. Then they'd need to share the results. So what did they do? They exported static images into PowerPoint. All that interactivity, all that statistical depth, flattened into a JPEG on a slide, the most powerful visualization tool in statistics, reduced to a screenshot. R needed a way out of the PDF, and it got one. In 2012, Joe Cheng at R Studio created Shiny, a framework that let R users build interactive web applications without knowing HTML, CSS, or JavaScript. For the first time, a statistician could build something that lived in a browser, something a non-technical person could click on, filter, explore. Shiny was a revelation. Thousands of researchers, analysts, and data scientists started building interactive dashboards. Universities used them for teaching. Pharmaceutical companies used them for regulatory submissions. During COVID, epidemiologists built Shiny apps that tracked case counts in real time, and health departments across the world used them to make policy decisions. But Shiny had its own problems. The apps were slow, they required a server, and, here's the killer, they broke the moment the person who built them left. A shiny app was often one data scientist's personal creation, undocumented and irreplaceable. When that person moved on, the dashboard died with them. Then came Quarto in 2022, the successor to R Markdown, letting R users publish reports, websites, books and presentations from the same code. And WebR compiled R itself to run directly in a browser through WebAssembly. No server, no installation, just R, running in a tab. By 2025, WebR supported around 20,000 packages and powered Shinny Live, serverless Shinny apps that needed nothing but a web browser. The language that had been trapped in PDFs was now running everywhere. R's community had a reputation problem for years. The R help mailing list was notorious. Send an email in HTML, scolded. Ask a question answerable by the documentation, one word reply, RTFM. Accidentally call an R package a library. One particular R core member would arrive within 3 minutes to correct you. That member was Brian Ripley, an Oxford professor who made the overwhelming majority of commits to R's source code and personally maintained CRAN's testing infrastructure. Getting a sharp public rebuke from Ripley was so common that the community coined a verb for it, Ripley'd. One developer described being devastated when his PhD package was removed from CRAN over a technicality, noting that even guys like Yehu and Hadley have been Ripley'd too. And CRAN itself, the comprehensive R archive network, home to over 23,000 packages, operates under famously strict policies. A small team of volunteers manually reviews every submission. Their official statement is blunt. The time of the volunteers is CRAN's most precious resource, and they reserve the right to remove packages without notice or explanation. When the Isoband package had a C++ issue, it nearly triggered a cascade that would have taken down 4,747 dependent packages, including ggplot2 itself. Close to 64% of packages that get archived from CRAN never come back. The hostility pushed the R community towards Stack Overflow and friendlier forums, but it also maintained a standard of quality that few other package repositories can match. Every few years, someone declares R dead. The R is dying narrative peaked in mid-2025, when a prominent R author published an essay predicting the language would disappear from industry and return to academia. Python appeared in 69% of data science job listings. R, just 33%. The rise of ChatGPT made things worse. AI coding assistants were trained primarily on Python, creating a self-reinforcing cycle. If the AI writes Python, newcomers learn Python. If newcomers learn Python, the AI gets more Python training data. But something unexpected happened. R climbed back. Its TOB ranking surged from 15th to 8th place in September 2025, and held the top 10 into early 2026. CRAN kept adding 120 to 200 new packages every month. The question stopped being R or Python, and became use both. R survived because it's irreplaceable where it matters most. Bioconductor dominates genomics. The Pharmaverse initiative is getting R-based submissions accepted by the FDA. Novo Nordisk ran a successful pilot. The BBC built an internal R package called BBplot to standardize all their data journalism. John Byrne Murdoch's COVID charts at the Financial Times, built in R and ggplot2, were seen by hundreds of millions and influenced government policy worldwide. You can write a machine learning model in Python, but when you need to submit a drug trial analysis to the FDA, when you need to publish a statistically defensible result in Nature, when you need to visualize genomic data for a clinical decision, you reach for R, and nobody has built a replacement for that. Meanwhile, R Studio rebranded as Posit in 2022, expanding toward Python. The company had raised $170 million at a valuation of nearly $800 million. In 2023, they hired Wes McKenney, the creator of Python's pandas. 1 month later, they laid off Yehu Xie, the man who created Nita and R Markdown, the tools that made reproducible research in R possible. The community was stunned. One developer wrote, "I would not have accomplished what I have without Yehu's work." And Microsoft, which had acquired Revolution Analytics in 2015 to bring R to the enterprise, quietly shut down its entire R infrastructure by 2023. The lesson was clear: when a corporation controls your open source infrastructure, they can take it away. R's survival has never depended on any single company. That's both its vulnerability and its strength. Two professors ran into each other in a hallway. One said, "Let's write some software." The other said, "Sure, that sounds like fun." They named their project after their initials. As a joke, neither of them ever made a cent from it. One called it a failure. The other left for Silicon Valley. The creator of the language R was built on joined R's team, calling it the successor to his life's work. A New Zealander from Hamilton built the tools that made it usable and won the Nobel Prize of Statistics, after his own university told him it wasn't real research. A mailing list became so hostile that people invented a verb for getting insulted on it. A company worth $800 million was built on a language nobody owns. The language itself, declared dead every few years, keeps climbing back up the charts, and the analysis it produces, in genomics labs, in FDA submissions, in newsrooms, in pandemic response teams, still can't be replicated by anything else. R was never supposed to be a real programming language. Ross Ahucker said so himself. But here's the thing about tools built by people who actually understand the problem they're solving. They tend to last. R works because it was built by statisticians who knew what statisticians actually need. Not by computer scientists guessing, not by a corporation selling, by two guys in a corridor, giving something away for free. Today, R has over 23,000 packages, runs in the browser through WebAssembly, validates the clinical trials behind the drugs you take, and help the world understand a pandemic through a single chart. Not bad for a joke between two guys whose names start with R.